Okay, I will try to give you an overview of our efforts to understand the system, which is a metallic plutonium. And I will talk about the application of dynamical mean field-based method to understand the electronic structure and total energies, structural stability of that highly interesting and exotic material. And this is essentially the work which I'm doing in collaboration with Rutgers people. Dyck Tsai is a postdoc of Gabi Kotler, and Elihu Abrahams is a senior member at physics in Rutgers. And also we have some help from experimentalists, and Albert Migliori is the fellow who is doing neutron diffraction measurements of various elastic properties of plutonium. So this is the periodic table, and the plutonium is located right in the middle of actinide series, and this unique location makes this material very unique in terms of the electronic structure properties, since it's well known that the actinide series can be divided into the light actinides and the heavy actinides. And the light actinides are more or less normal metals, while heavy actinides are used to be thought as strongly correlated materials. So that unique position of plutonium makes several of his solid state properties very puzzling. As a first property which I basically would try to explain during my talk is, if we look at the phase diagram of plutonium, which has been measured a long time ago, then this phase diagram shows many crystal structures which are numerated by Greek letters here, alpha, beta, gamma, delta, delta prime, epsilon, among which, as you see, if you measure the volume of plutonium as a function of temperature, you see here that the volume expands enormously if you measure the volume from the alpha phase to the delta phase on the scale of 200 degrees, which means that there is a huge, anomalously large volume expansion of plutonium. And after that, and by the way, this kind of volume expansion is unique among elemental metals. There is no other elemental system which shows such a huge volume expansion. And after, if you trace down further the how volume behaves as a function of temperature, actually you see that delta phase, which is simple phase-centered cubic phase here, shows anomalous thermal expansion coefficients in the sense that the volume contracts slightly if you heat the material further. And when it goes to the epsilon phase, it shows a volume contraction. It is not as large as the volume expansion here. The volume expansion is around 25%. That still, it's very puzzling one why the volume contracts by several percent if you heat it. And it ends up in the epsilon phase, which is also relatively simple body-centered cubic, and goes to the liquid at temperatures which are around 600 degrees Celsius. So now, if we take a look at the resistivity, it also shows a very anomalous behavior, which is a characteristic of heavy fermion materials. And this is the resistivity of plutonium. And at the same scale, you see the resistivity of the heavy fermion system. And of course, potassium here has a very small resistivity. So that anomalous resistivity can be contrasted to the susceptibility. And it turns that susceptibility doesn't show any interesting behavior. It is small. and it is small in all phases, alpha, beta, gamma, and so on. And it is also relatively temperature independent. It is known that plutonium does not show magnetic ordering at all temperatures. And again, this is very puzzling if you compare this stability for, if you think of plutonium as a heavy fermion system. So now, this is the photoemission data, which again show that plutonium exhibits a huge peak, quasi-particle peak at the Fermi level. And you see here, this is the delta plutonium, which shows this peak. And then this feature, which is located, I believe, at around 1 electron volt from the Fermi level. And as you see that if you cool the material from the delta phase to the alpha phase, that basically that quasi-particle peak gets broadened by a factor of 2 or 3, and also this feature smears out. So these are essential experimental data which needs to be understood and form the plutonium puzzle. And as I said, that the variety of crystal structure, huge volume expansion between delta and alpha phases, and then anomalous thermal expansion of delta phase, it shows a negative thermal expansion. The contraction of volume, if you hit it further from delta 2, which is the FCC lattice, to epsilon, which is the BCC lattice, the feature near the Fermi level, anomalous resistivity, and at the same time temperature independent, small susceptibility, absence of long range magnetic order. These are all the properties which have to be addressed by theoretical calculations. So I will now briefly review what we know from the local density approximation calculation of that material. There is actually a lot which has been done by the one electron community to understand the properties of plutonium. And there is a number of very nice calculations which include, besides the local density approximation, the spin orbit coupling effects and so on, the effect of the precise crystal structure, since, for example, all low temperature phases like alpha, for example, alpha phase shows a relatively complicated structure with 16 atoms per unit cell. And there is quite a bit of work which has been done in the past. Unfortunately, the success, it was not so successful in terms of understanding all of the properties. And the first thing which we could find that the LDA or LSDA, it would predict plutonium to be magnetic. And as a second result, the LDA is known to give pretty good and reliable estimates for the volume of solids, so that if you apply this kind of technology to evaluate the volume of the FCC lattice, then you would find that it will be given by 30% of the experimental data. And this is, in fact, the largest known discrepancy for density functional-like calculation, and that is just shows you how the total energy behaves and what it would predict for the delta plutonium if we use slightly modified functional, including the gradient corrections here. If we now look at the density of states, then this is again the calculated by using the LDA density of states, which essentially shows you the two peaks near the Fermi level, and the origin of these peaks are due to spin orbit coupling. This is 5F, 5 divided by 2 and 5F, 7 divided by 2 states separated by the value of spin orbit, which is pretty large for plutonium and around 2 electron volts. So that the problem here, if you look at the photoemission that at first glance, it actually fits quite good. But there are two problems here, so that if we could interpret that peak as what is seen on photoemission, then the Fermi level would necessarily fall into the gap. and the density of states, which could be compared with the specific heat data obtained by the local density approximation, is actually pretty small. And if we could think of shifting the Fermi level a little bit here, then we of course lose a lot of electrons. Actually, there are five f electrons here, so we are not allowed to shift the Fermi level anywhere from these gap regions. So as you see, that the LDA has apparent problems here, and what has been proposed is to look at this material as a strongly correlated systems, where we of course know that for strongly correlated systems, the local density approximation fails not only for plutonium, but it fails for MOT insulators, for cuprates and other systems, where physics can be qualitatively understood in some cases based on many-body Hamiltonian problems, solving many-body Hamiltonians, which in turn would require to put some experimental information to build the correct model. But this is only one part of the problem. Another part of the problem is that we also would like to access the dynamic of the lattice of strongly correlated materials and deal with the electron phone coupling in those systems. Apparently, at least in plutonium, this kind of interactions are important because simply you see how many structures plutonium lattice shows in the nature. And a motivation of developing it, we would like to access the phase diagrams, lattice vibration distortions, and so on. We would like to see what is the strength of electron phone coupling in plutonium in particular, and in strongly correlated materials in general, and so on and so forth. So I will also show you some preliminary results which we got. We start looking at plutonium lattice dynamics, and we also already look at the primitive case of strongly correlated systems in the MOT limit, which is nickel oxide. We look at the phonons and static dielectric properties, the splitting of longitudinal optical and transfer modes, and Born effective charges, and so on. So I guess that we now can say that as far as the lattice dynamics and electron phone coupling is concerned, we have a nice technique which is based on the linear response theory. And for weakly correlated materials, that technique has been applied and has been found that there is a great success in understanding the, for example, the phonon spectrum of silicon. As you see here, I show the phonon dispersion curves for silicon can be obtained with a fantastic accuracy, which is of the order of a few percent. So that if this kind of technology can be transferred to the case of strongly correlated systems, that would be really nice. And the questions which we also like to ask is the LDA, when we know that it fails to describe the ground state of the strongly correlated system, whether we have a chance to predict lattice dynamics correctly, which is in turn, of course, the ground state property if we work with the adiabatic approximation. Unfortunately, we know again that even for such simple system as MOT insulators, we could not get the, for example, the optical gamma phonon is known to be predicted off by a factor of 2 in that system. And also, back to plutonium, the bulk modulus for plutonium is one order of magnitude too large with an LDA, and elastic constants are off. So that we like to develop a new method which is essentially will capture the importance of the on-site Hubbard parameter U in that calculation, and the technique which we would like to use is the dynamical mean field theory, and I just show you the famous picture how this method would treat the one electron density of states if we plug in the on-site Coulomb repulsion, and this development would correspond to the U equals zero limit where we have, say, the semicircular density of states, and when U becomes non-zero, how that system develops with the appearance, with renormalization of our quasi-particle band and appearance of two Hubbard subband, and at somewhere at large U, depending on degeneracy of this model, you would get from the metallic state through a Condé regime to an insulating state. So this mod physics has to be built in, and from our point of view, is very important to understand plutonium, so that in order to incorporate that technique into the electronic structure framework, we would like to, first of all, write down some functional which we minimize, and in fact, there is a great deal of development of this kind of techniques in the electronic structure community in collaboration with the many-body community. And what is the idea here is, again, is to view the total energy of our strongly correlated system, which has non-negligible Coulomb repulsion, on-site Coulomb repulsion, as a functional, not only the charge density and potential, but also into introduce the notion of the local Green's function and the local self-energy, where for simplicity, at least for plutonium and for some other system, we could assume that our local Green's function is actually energy resolved only for correlated electrons, which for plutonium would mean only the FF block has to be treated with care. And for example, in nickel oxide, this local Green function is only non-zero for nickel D electrons. So that kind of the total energy technique will be used to evaluate the properties of plutonium. And as a further development in that technique, this would provide us a foundation for studying lattice dynamics of that system, simply because we could evaluate the second order change in the total energy when we move our lattice, which gives us directly the dynamical matrix, and as with the ordinary linear response theory, which leads to find the changes in charge density and the changes in our Kunshan potential with respect to the atomic displacement, that would also require us to develop the method which would evaluate changes in the local Green's function and the local self-energies with respect to the atomic displacements. So now, this is how the electronic structure algorithm works. If you want to do the dynamical mean field based electronic structure calculations, it's a basically generalization of the Kohn-Sham algorithm, where we would have to plug in the frequency dependent self energy in the Kohn-Sham equation. And since LDA is still mixed with the many body self energy, and LDA of course takes care about some of the exchange correlation effects in the average manner, which are contained now both here in that term and that term, we have to put the double counting, which is again is a little bit of problem, so there should be some empirical evidence how we select the double counting form for use in that equation. And that is essentially the equation which we now have to solve, and usually it is solved on the imaginary frequency axis to get access to the local Green's function, and as we get access to the local Green's function, we could find the charge density and building the charge density, we could evaluate the total energy of the system. So that Now, if we look at the linear response theory, then the generalization is pretty straightforward. If before, what we just do is just evaluate the changes in all these quantities with respect to the atomic displacement, which would, in principle, lead us now to solve this kind of linearized Dyson equation. And if before we developed the technique to evaluate those kind of terms without frequency-dependent quantities, now we just keep them and evaluate the change in the local Green's function. So what is the role of impurity model in this kind of calculations? It is now seen that we have to solve or learn how to solve the Anderson impurity model as a function of lattice distortion. So that means that in the first order perturbation theory, we have to learn how to do the changes of the one electron Green's function and the changes in the one electron self energies here. So that to make life simpler, I just listed what's going to happen if we simply use the Gottsweiler approximation. Which essentially I mean that we want to renormalize the electronic masses and shrink our band structure, forgetting about the Hubbard features, the Hubbard satellites. In that case, the method which delivers us the changes in the band renormalization, mass renormalization, we have to differentiate and find what's going to be the change of the mass renormalization with respect to atomic displacement. So that in the static limit, which is a Hartree-Fock or LDA plus U, which is seen as a static limit of that theory, would lead us to find changes in the occupancy matrix for block of the correlated electrons, which is simply is an integral of the local Green's function over the frequency. And again, if I look at the Hubbard 1 approximation, then we basically ask what are the changes of atomic level since Hubbard 1 would involve the atomic Green's function in the calculations, that we have to find changes in atomic level due to displacements. And by symmetry, I believe that this only happens when we are interested in the gamma point optical modes. So to show you how that kind of method works for nickel oxide, we want to test that first for nickel oxide. I will now show you how we do the funnels for nickel oxide, both in the order at low T phase and above the nail temperature. And it's well known that system is insulating in both below and above the nail temperature. Below the nail temperature, the Hartree-Fock or LDA plus U calculation shows that we can reproduce the correct energy gap. Again, the LDA itself is not very reliable since it misses that U, which is apparently very large for nickel oxide of the order of 8 electron volts. But LDA plus U does a nice job in the ordered phase. Of course, we cannot access, it is actually LSDA plus U, so that we have to impose the notion of the spin into the calculation. And if we hit the system by several hundred degrees, of course, the system goes to paramagnetic insulated state with disordered moment regime, and LDA plus U is no longer useful here, since it would reduce to LDA and it would screw up all our calculation. So in that case, we need to do a little bit more work. And what we did recently, and we applied the Hubbard 1 approximation for the local moment regime. And actually, what we have found is the remarkable coincidence between the phonons in both phases. First of all, this is the phonons for nickel oxide in the straight LDA or in the LSDA. Actually, this is LSDA local spin density approximation. It shows some small energy gap, but since the energy gap is strongly underestimated, as you see that the all optical modes are screwed up essentially because of the overscreening, and also the LO key or splitting key is very small, essentially leading us to very large value of the static dielectric constant. In the LDA plus U, or in our language that would be Hartree-Fock approximation, we could immediately fix all this problem, as you see that the optics here comes out much better, and there are some residual discrepancies here. For example, we didn't get the precise dispersion relations. But overall, the agreement now is much better with LDA plus U or Hartree-Fock-like theory. And if we go above the nail temperature where LDA plus U would fail, then we have to elaborate further, and we applied the so-called Hubbard 1 kind of approximation, which in turns would give you very similar phonon spectrum. And it is in fact measured experimentally that the phonons in multi-insulating systems like nickel oxide or manganese oxide don't show any changes if you go across the phase transition point. So this is now my overview of what we did for plutonium. We use the LMTO method, like we also use it for nickel oxide. We use various impurity solvers. Unfortunately, we still don't have a completely what we have used is it various properties here were evaluated based on different impurity solvers, like Hartree-Fock, as I said, LDA plus U, or Hartree-Fock-like theory. We did extensive calculation of all the energetics and spectra in phonons. And Gutzwiller plus Hubbard scheme means essentially that we use the Gutzwiller method to evaluate the mass renormalization parameters, and the Hubbard scheme would give us the notion of the Hubbard bands, so that we interpolate self-energy between Gutzwiller and Hubbard to access the full frequency range of self-energy. If Gutzwiller gives us a slope, is a low frequency technique, and the Hubbard can be thought as the moment expansion is a high frequency technique, this is interpolated scheme between low and high frequencies. And the Hubbard one alone was also used to evaluate some of the phonon related spectra. The spin orbit coupling effects have been included so far in the total energy calculations only, and the phonons which we have been computed, which I will discuss later on, have been done using non-spin orbit couplet calculations. So that is the result. We published it last year, which shows you how the total energy depends on the value of U, of the on-site Hubbard U, which we plug in into the calculation, which simply highlights you the importance of that parameter in predicting the correct equilibrium volume. So that if I start tracing, this is the GGA data for FCC lattice, and I start plugging in U, which is now 3 electron volt, simply doesn't change anything here, but once I get to the value, to the critical value, which is of the order of 4 electron volts, then you see that the possibility of double minimum appears here, and in turns, by slight change of the U from 4 to 4.2 electron volts, we could flip that minimum. And that is probably what is happening in the phase diagram of plutonium. And it shows that there are evaluations of the U based on the constrained density functional theory, which seems like find that the U could change on if you compress the lattice by 30%, the changes in the on-site interaction of the order of this kind of order of magnitude are expected. And as you see here, we also performed, it's cheap to perform the same kind of calculation for a BCC environment, And we also saw that the BCC lattice shows the same large volume, and it is actually slightly smaller than FCC in accord with the experiment. And I guess that at least this kind of feature, this kind of slight volume contraction, is even seen on the LDA plus U, simplest LDA plus U based calculation. Now, I show you now the comparison with the photo emission, and as you see, that dynamical mean field result does show us the quasi-particle feature as the photo emission experiment shows, and at the same time it shows us the low Hubbard band. The spectral weight of this low Hubbard band is somewhat smaller, and its position is somewhat closer to the Fermi level, but at the qualitative level, I guess we captured the essential features of the photoemission spectra, if we are allowed to interpret that as the quasi-normalized quasi-particle peak and the lower Hubbard band in our calculation. So that if we compress that by 30%, now the thing which I'd like to look at now is how that density of states depends on the volume. So we could not do, unfortunately, the full alpha structure with 16 atoms per unit cell. This is our alpha structure, which is simply FCC structure at 25% compression. And to look at what's going on, we have to trace this figure. This is the calculation for the delta phase, which shows again that quasi-particle peak and the lower Hubbard band. And now if I compress that and do the calculation at compressed structure, you would see that this is now my compressed alpha phase, which you see, first of all, that the quasi-particle gets broadened by a factor of 2, and essentially the lower Hubbard band gets smeared out here. And if you take a look what's going on at the experiment, it's again, you could find that the same kind of tendency is shown at the experimental photoemission data. This is our delta plutonium, which shows these two features. And when it goes to the alpha phase, you see that the alpha quasi-particle peaks got broadened significantly, and essentially there is nothing which is seen here. So that now, when we did this kind of calculation, we proceed with the calculation of the phonons and FCC structure, and that result shows you the calculated by the linear response technique, the full phonon spectrum of the delta plutonium. So that, by the way, there is no measurements of that phonon spectrum. It's simply hard to grow large single crystals of that material. So that what we see is actually the ordinary phonon spectrum with maybe some small anomalies which are shown in this transverse branch, and there is a little softening here. But overall, we can conclude that the delta plutonium shows a quite stable lattice. We then calculated the epsilon phase, which is a BCC phase, and we found that this in contrast to the FCC plutonium, the epsilon plutonium shows quite a lot of anomalous behavior. For example, this transverse branch is completely imaginary here, and the largest instability occurs for 110 point. And also we see quite a lot of softening in that direction. And that points you out that there is a lot of phonon entropy which is involved in the phase diagram, and which is responsible for the very rich phase diagram of plutonium. So that we now took a more closer look at what is going on with this transverse mod in epsilon phase, this shows you the polarization of atoms. Essentially, you have to think of the BCC lattice as plane perpendicular to the 110 line. And since this is the transfer mod, that essentially the one plane goes one way and another plane goes in the opposite direction, which would correspond to the zone boundary point. So we analyzed that mod with the total energy algorithm, and we see that there is a double well behavior, which is now shown. This is what corresponds to the undistorted lattice or simple BCC lattice. And then when we start to distort it, then you see that there is a huge, in fact, distortion, which corresponds to the 10% of the units of lattice parameter, where the system likes to be in the equilibrium. And then the curve goes rapidly up. So, and that feature is quite robust, even if we do LDA plus U or Hubbard 1 calculation. We haven't done that calculation using the Getz-Wheeler plus Hubbard 1 scheme, but the precise depth of this double well depends on the approximation we use. But for example, for that kind of calculation, it is actually several hundred degrees. The order of magnitude is correct, so that if we think of the that lattice which exists at around 800-900 degrees Kelvin, then essentially we are somewhere here. And as I said, that feature is quite robust, so that even LDA would show you, then we switch off all our things and we just look at the straight LDA calculation. And then we saw that it shows not a double well, but a triple well here. And the total energy now behaves in LDA like it would give you first a relatively stable mod, and then it wants to actually go into a much more energy favorable state. So we believe that in that respect, the instability is a genuine feature of the epsilon plutonium. So that I think that the phonon entropy in plutonium is very important, and since we have this unstable mod which has a lot of phonon entropy, we have to take into account if we want to understand the origin of the delta to epsilon transition. And in that respect, phonon entropy in cerium can be safely neglected simply because we have an isostructural transition, and this is contrasted to what we want to claim for the delta to epsilon transition in plutonium. So now we try to evaluate the phonon entropy term, assuming that the electronic entropy in both in delta and epsilon phases are the same, to see if we could predict the TC of the delta to epsilon transition. So that we took total energies plus the entropy term, and we evaluated the phonon entropy based on our calculation of phonons, so that we are able to see the difference between the free energy of BCC and FCC lattices. And in fact, we found that the BCC lattice gets more favorable at the temperatures of the order of 500 degrees, which is again the factor of two off, but the order of magnitude is definitely all right. So, and this again points us out that the phonon entropy is really the thing which is important in understanding the phase diagram of that material. So I guess this is my conclusion. I try to convince you that the linear response method based on DMFT is needed for studying the contribution of phonons in strongly correlated systems. And the DMFT itself was very useful to us to understand the alpha to delta volume expansion in plutonium. And it is now, it seems like, gives us a correct hint how do we understand the delta to epsilon volume contraction, simply because the epsilon phase looks like it's more itinerant, therefore it likes to be at a smaller volume, and what drives that transition is really the dynamic of the BCC lattice. And of course it would be very nice to see some of the experiment which we could compare for the phonons in that system. Thank you.
Questions? Okay, Dmitry.
You said about the volume expansion, that when you use the U as a parameter, you found the value of U that it does the job.
Yes.
Now, then you compare it with photoemission results, the density of states.
Mm-hmm.
These results correspond to the same U.
This result corresponds to the same U, yes. And as far as the evaluation of U is concerned, we have several techniques which gives us the values of U at the range of the 3 to 4 electron volts in plutonium. Like we look at the atomic spectral data, which were known many years ago, 30 years ago, that the evaluation of U for F electrons was like 4.5 electron volts. Then we have the data of published data of constrained density functional calculations, which gives the values of U of the order of 3 electron volts. So that this is in this regime. The value of U, which is 4, simply comes out as the result of fine-tuning the volume of the plutonium to the experimental one. That is our U, which we follow up, and we did all the calculation of phonons, all the calculation of spectra with that value. And there is no J, we can't plug in any J, J is equal to 0. So it's a U-only calculation, assuming the so-called SUM symmetry.
For this particular value of U in U, is the system magnetic or non-magnetic? Does it have a local moment or not?
Well, in LSDA kind of calculation, or LSDA plus U calculation, it is magnetic. Now, if we work with the Hubbard one, we can still get very similar density of states, which would miss, of course, the renormalization of quasi-particle band. It only gives us the satellite, which would correspond to spin-up and spin-down states in magnetic phase. But in the Hubbard 1 calculation, the Hubbard 1 is non-magnetic calculation, but it still would reproduce us the same kind of density of states. So that, what should I say, that we did quite a lot of comparison for nickel oxide where the Hubbard 1 theory is more or less exact. So for nickel oxide, we basically see that we could get the density of states for the low temperature ordered phase with the LDA plus U calculation, and we could get the same density of states above the nail temperature with the Hubbard 1 calculation. So the same would happen for plutonium density of states if we stay with within these approximations. Well, if you think of the disorder in the local moment, that's what Hubbard 1 would do. So that we think that plutonium is in the disordered local moment regime. The atomic moments exist, but they disorder it. There is no average moment. There is no long range order. That's what they say.
There is no Curie-Weiss law.
But the Curie-Weiss law is again okay because we have a pretty large quasi-particle peak. Unfortunately, it is missed in the Hubbard 1, but the quasi-particle peak is thick. Therefore, you wouldn't see the Curie-Weiss law and susceptibility as long as you stay with the with that picture. So it again fits into what we see and what experimentalists observe.
Just comment on the experimental situation, because it's now almost routine some millimeters in the cosmos to determine photon spirit. So, the plutonium, because we need just micron size cosmos, because it's so many electrons. We need to get somebody to do the measurement.
Okay. that is part of the problem, yes. That's a classified.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can the impurity solver that you're using generate valence distributions? So I mean like fractional amounts of say F4, F5, F6?
Yes, the most sophisticated one we used, as I said, is based on the combination of Gottswiller and Hubbard methods, and that impurity solver, in principle, accumulates both the metallic regime and the insulating phase, and whenever we add the phase diagram, it comes out. The level of approximation is basically here, how good is the Gottswiller in predicting us the mod transition point. And we did quite a lot of work, which seems like it gives us a pretty reliable data within 20% accuracy if we compare with the quantum Monte Carlo. So that kind of scheme, unfortunately, as I said, I haven't done the calculation of phonons with that technique, which is it's relatively expensive. For us, it's cheap to do Hubbard 1 or LDA plus U, and we actually saw that, at least for nickel oxide, nothing really happens. LDA plus U is a very cheap technique.
I was interested in the valence distribution because I made an effort once with Larry Cox to try to analyze core level spectroscopy in different phases of plutonium using a kind of, well, I would have to say, creative application of the Anderson impurity model, and we extracted from the data some valence distributions of F4, F5, F6 for the alpha and the delta phases, and maybe if we have them coming out of the calculation,
we should make the comparison
that could be made. And
sure.
Come out, but it would be interesting.
Sure. Thank you.
So, what do you want? Okay, Antoine.
What about the electronic entropy? Well, okay, so the story was it's extremely difficult to evaluate. So we thought that it should be similar in both delta and epsilon. We simply neglected. So that is only the phonon entropy which is accounted for at the moment. Okay, so as far as the bulk modulus are concerned, first of all, Joan did the LDE plus U studies of bulk modulus, and they are in much nicer agreement with experiment that LDA gives. Unfortunately, there is something like factor of two floating around with the bulk modulus, and I would also guess that the phonons we predict are also have the same kind of accuracy, because essentially you could lean, probably it's a little less because of square root of 2 is involved in phonons. Well, what I guess we look at is the BCC and FCC lattices, and we get much better because LDA is the one order of magnitude off, so we have like a factor of 2 off. And in fact, We also talked with all Los Alamos people, and I guess they now are remeasuring these kind of things, and at least they see elastic constants which are a little different that they published it earlier. So I think that they are closer to what we measure now, what we calculate. So there is still not completely clear what is the discrepancy between us and the experiments. Well, the specific heat in that calculation is also underestimated. If I just extract the density of states, it would underestimate, again, LDA would underestimate the specific heat, the density of state by a factor of 5. I guess that we underestimate the specific heat maybe by 50%. The density of state is still too small. But as I said, it would depend on the value of U in that calculation. And also, electron phonon contribution is not known. So we don't know what the electron phonon lambda to make the precise comparison.
Okay. Carson.
What then? But only we indicated what we haven't then, and the quasi-particle peak was, but then there was also very broad spectral features, lower energies. Is it just SPD electrons? I asked about the there.
This is the hybridized. There is a lot of stuff in. So it's essentially the S band and the D band mixed, and I think that the SD bandwidth is around 20 electron volts in plutonium, and that there is a very narrow F features there. So this is a strongly hybridized SD band below the Fermi level.
The Y wall is there in the LGA? Did I just miss it? So the A spectrum. I didn't see this broad part, or was it
the,
something like this?
The LDA, okay, so LDA gives us okay. Also quite a lot of structure here. Okay, this is the green line, and I may be right. So this is the dashed line, so it has similar stuff here. But you also should be careful with photoemission so that that might have some secondary tails coming out to discuss the precise intensities. That is all for EV. U is always for EV. We look at it, but essentially we did all the calculation of 4 electron volts. So, but we know what's going to happen from the models if you increase U. You would get that more narrow. I mean, the density of states would look nicer in the sense that this will go down, this gets more narrow, you get more, I guess, the agreement would be better. But then we would lose the prediction for total, I mean, there are moving parts here, Exchange, there is no exchange here.
What is a ground state multiplet in Hubbard?
No, it's kind of...
It's a U only calculation.
No, but it's... It,
what?
Yeah, it's related with the Kai, yeah.
Probably if it's a ground state multiplet is non-magnetic, then it will be agreed with its theorem. And it's not the local moment. Mm-hmm. If S equal to zero multiple.
Well, what we found as far as the magnetism is concerned, we did the work on LDA plus U. What we found also is that there is a huge orbital moment which nearly compensates the spin moment in that system. Okay, so there is a...
Right. Maybe J equal to zero multiple and nothing else. Right. Because the nickel oxide is really S equal to 1 multiplet, which is ground state. Josh, remember? Right. Sure. But for this system... Yeah, but if excitation energy is light, then you don't see...
Yeah.
Sure. So if you have a proper...
Solver.
Purity solver, which
yes.
Treat,
How much work is that to do the proper impurity solver?
So we will discuss after the next stop, probably. Okay, Antoine, you want to? Okay, so let's thank Sergei.
Thank you.